Charles Maynes there in Moscow speaking with us earlier today. So how did the Russians do? All right, spoiler alert, if you don't already know and want to catch the game later, block your ears right now. Final score on that game was Russia 5, Saudi 0. For many fans, this is a moment to relish, to put politics aside and just get totally tribal. Let's not forget, the World Cup is the biggest tournament of the world's most popular sport. So, yeah, embrace the tribalism. Patrick Cox is a big soccer fan. He also hosts our podcast on language, The World in Words.
And you know what? There is a ton to talk about when it comes to soccer and language. I've always known that so many of the words and phrases that we use to describe, you know, soccer skills and moves and stuff, they come from other languages. And that's why I wanted to talk to Tom Williams. He's compiled a glossary of soccer terminology in as many languages as he could find out about. So let me play you a bit of my conversation with Tom. He speaks French, and it was that that got him thinking about the role that French and other languages, the role they play in our understanding of the game.
There is a really straightforward football skill, soccer skill, that has no name in English, and it's when a player gets the ball. He has an opponent running towards him, so he knocks the ball past the opponent on one side and then runs around the other side to collect it.
Oh, yeah.
You see
I've
it
tried
almost,
and failed many times to do that.
You see it in almost every football match you ever watch. And in French, they call it un grand pont, a big bridge. And it's the sister term of their name for a nutmeg when you push the ball between an opponent's legs, which is known as a petit pont, a little bridge. And then I found that there were terms for this skill move in other languages. So in Spanish, it's an autopass, like a self-pass, which is pretty self-explanatory. Mm. In Brazil, in Brazilian Portuguese, they call it a drible de vaca, which means a cow dribble. And the story there is supposedly that when amateur footballers were playing games on bits of scrubland and farmland, you having to circumnavigate passing bovines was an occupational hazard. And so that's the thinking behind where that term comes from. And we don't have a name for that in English. So I think that informed the desire to write about the language of football, both just to celebrate it and also to use it to draw attention to all these, you know, skill moves and technical elements to the game that we've never really got round to naming in English.
Makes you realize that English isn't the be-all and end-all of this. Our glossary is incomplete.
Yes, there's a sense that in Britain, as the inventors of modern football, if you like, as the country that codified the sport and exported it around the world, we didn't see the need to give names to various elements of the sport. So the linguistic building blocks of football, if you like, remain British in origin. Football itself, soccer even, which is a corruption of association football, goal, offside, referee, free kick, penalty. And these words are used all around the world, the basic terminology of football, if you like. But then the slightly more elaborate language to do with skill moves, particularly. These were things that had to be invented somewhere else because it was other countries that played the sport with the requisite level of technical artistry, if you like, that enabled new skills to be invented. And as a result, we have these loan words in the English language. I mean, Rabona, which comes from Argentinian football, is the skill whereby a player wraps his kicking foot behind his standing foot to kick the ball. And that's something that is quite widely referred to as Rabona in multiple different football countries. And that's why Rabona is now adopted by people speaking about football in English.
What is up, people? PWG here. And a lot of you guys have been asking for a Rabona tutorial. Today's your lucky day.
So a Rabona, kind of a blind back pass. You ever tried one of those, Patrick?
I have made a fool of myself in many ways on the soccer field, but not that particular way.
Okay. So those are soccer skills. Really fascinating. What about other situations on the field, like a super fast counterattack or a team that only wants to defend?
Oh, a team that only wants to defend. Now, that actually got coined by Portuguese coach José Mourinho. He described that as parking the bus.
Not going anywhere.
There is a fantastic variety of ways that you can describe, for example, chaos on the soccer field. Like when a defense is overrun, they've lost all semblance of organization. So in British English, we actually borrow an American term that I don't think you use in sports.
What
we
is it?
Say, it's all Keystone Cops.
Huh. No, we don't use that in sports. I do use it some other ways, but not in sports.
And then the Portuguese, they'll call the same thing, this sort of defensive chaos, and please pardon my pronunciation here, andar aos papéis, which means walking on papers.
Huh.
Don't know why.
Yeah.
The Dutch, they say something completely unpronounceable that I'm not even going to try, but it means women and children first.
The boat sinking, women and children first.
Something like that. The best one, you tell me if you understand why this could possibly be the case.
Okay.
It's Norwegian, and they describe this defensive chaos as Hawaii football.
Hawaii football.
Yep.
Hawaii 5-0, big waves crashing. I don't know. But yeah.
Volcanoes.
It evokes something for them. You know, all of this, Patrick, especially that cow dribble from Brazil, it reminds me of the joy I have just watching soccer games in languages other than English.
Yeah, yeah. Tom Williams and I talked about that too. Here he is again.
I mean, there's a lot to be said for watching football matches in the original commentary, even if you don't understand the language, just to get a sense of what those games sound like when they're watched in a different country. And I think also something that the internet and social media in particular has helped to do is to open people's ears to different forms of commentary from around the world. I mean, I'm thinking now when Egypt qualified for the World Cup, Mo Salah scored this impossibly dramatic penalty deep into stoppage time of their final qualifying match. And the Egyptian commentator, while he was calling the goal, actually broke down in tears. And as he's sobbing into his microphone, the camera is panning around the stadium, and you realise that half the people there are in tears because Egypt have waited since 1990 to reach a World Cup, and they've finally done it in this heart-stopping fashion. So I suspect, thanks to social media, that if we do get any, you know, particularly memorable moments in the commentary on a game, even if it's not in English, that that'll be something that will be shared and that people get an opportunity to watch.
Wow, that emotion from that Egyptian commentator, that is the quintessence of the World Cup. Tom Williams there, and he's written a book, right, Patrick?
Yep, the book is called Do You Speak Football? A Glossary of Words and Phrases from Around the World.
All right, and I have to ask, Patrick, who are you rooting for in this year's World Cup? It's got to be England, right?
I think I'm going to sidestep that question. I'm going to say I'm rooting for good, interesting stories to come out of this World Cup. And actually, there is one involving England. In my nerdy language world, at least, it counts as a good story. So the three Russian cities holding England games in the group stage of the World Cup are Volgograd, Nizhny Novgorod, and Kaliningrad, if I've got those pronunciations correct.
Sounds pretty good.
Guess what they have in common, apart from being Russian?
What do they have in common?
Until quite recently, they all had different names. So Volgograd used to be Stalingrad. It was changed after a few years after Joseph Stalin died. Nizhny Novgorod also had a communist-era name. It was called Gorky, after the Russian writer Maxim Gorky. And Kaliningrad, it used to be a German city called Königsberg until the end of the Second World War when the Soviet troops took it over, and it's been Russian ever since.
I mean, that really speaks volumes, doesn't it, about Russian history and just the tumult over the years in that part of the world.
Indeed.
Very skillful sidestepping of the question, or as the French would say, a petit pont. Patrick Cox hosts our podcast, The World in Words. Thanks a lot for this, Patrick. It was really fascinating.
You're welcome, Marco.